Minnow Lake Association to get it all fixed up and looking pretty the way it is today. And I'd like to welcome John Lindsay on board. So some people might remember him as Jack Richmond, but we won't go there, John. Well, I'd like to lead on to you because Friendly to Seniors is something that is very close to both of our hearts here. We elect politicians, provincial and municipal as well as federal, and we expect responsible government. We expect the politicians to manage our affairs properly. But now what happens, we see in Ontario the increase in hydro rates coming up, I think, October the 1st or thereabouts. We've got this morning announcement of an increase in natural gas rates. We have our municipal government that is $3 million in the hole and spending goodness knows what kind of money on what some might view frivolous things. But John, how does this all square with Friendly to Seniors? How friendly is our responsible government to seniors?
Well, that's a very good question, Lionel, and I know that sometimes after that lead-in, I think I should be interviewing you because I know you have very many opinions on this as well, too. And indeed, we did, if you recall, on our opinions program on our Friendly to Seniors website, which is friendlytoseniors.ca, and I think that video is still up there, and we talked, I can't remember what we talked about back then, but we're always dealing with what might be considered controversial issues, but very important to seniors, because you know, seniors are a little different than maybe the rest of the population in that, you know, we've reached a point in time where our income is basically limited. We're not really working anymore. Most of us aren't really working anymore. So therefore, the opportunity to generate extra income to cover inflation and other expenses just isn't there. So we're on what might be termed fixed income, and tied, you know, with very, very minuscule increases in our social benefits like OAS and CPP from the government, and perhaps if you do lucky enough to have a defined pension that maybe has some increases built in, but probably not enough to cover the increased costs like such we're facing here in this province and in this very municipality, and it's a real concern. How can we afford, with inflation like it is, even at 2%, it still increases every year. How can we afford to live if you're retiring, say, at even 65, and a lot of people retire before then? How can you afford to live to, let's say, 90, which some people are living to? And, you know, it's just becoming a real concern about, you know, being able to have your money last as long as you do. How are you going to do that?
Now, from your experience here, being involved in the community and many, many aspects of the community, especially Friendly to Seniors, what has your observations been of the impact of increased costs to seniors that they have absolutely no control over?
I guess we have what might be called the perfect storm, and I think not only Friendly to Seniors, but the CARP, the Canadian Association of Retired Persons, I'm vice chair there. We have a meeting coming up on the 29th, and one of the head individuals from the CARP organization is coming to town for that meeting, which is going to be taking place at Science North in the Lanman Room right across from the cafeteria at 12:30 on the 29th. Folks come out absolutely free and hear what CARP has to say about things, because they're an advocacy group too, and very strong, and feel very much the same way as Friendly to Seniors and all seniors do, and indeed all citizens, because I think there's a real concern with citizens in this community now, because we're really facing a crunch. We've lost approximately 4,000 jobs in the last couple of years. We see the assessment going down. We see costs going up, and this puts us in a real squeeze. It's like an individual with having, you know, to balance their own personal budget, and they see, you know, maybe not earning as much as they did before, while costs keep going up. And I think maybe we're dealing with a situation here with our municipal leaders who, looking through rose-colored glasses, seeing that, well, things are going to get better, but in the meantime, they don't seem to be getting better. And we have a municipality that's so large, almost ungovernable. You know, what happened years ago with the amalgamation probably did not do us any real good service. So we're looking at increased cost, and we've hired several hundred more people working for the government than we had when we had the individual municipalities, and these costs all keep piling up. And personally, do I have any answers? I don't really know, but I know that when you look at other municipalities that have faced similar situations, like Windsor, Ontario, which lost a great deal of employment due to the declining in the auto industry, and they had the situation that they really had to look in the eye and see what they had to do, and they looked at it very carefully. And it's interesting to note that Windsor has had no increase in taxes in the past 8 years. It's really quite phenomenal. While at the same time, they've added a great deal of infrastructure, they've reduced their debt, and they've increased their reserves. Now, you know, you might think if somebody's doing something that seems to be, you know, advantageous to the community, that perhaps you might take a look at it and see, what have they done that perhaps we can do? Now, we've mentioned this, you know, to the local authorities here, our local municipal leaders, and they say that, as we often hear said, well, Sudbury's different. You know, Sudbury just can't adopt what other cities and other municipalities have done because we're different. And indeed, we are different. You know, we have a large municipality. You know, we have thousands of roads. Sometimes we criticize our roads department, but they're looking after, you know, literally thousands of kilometers of streets and roads here. And how do you keep it all together? How do you maintain it? How do you build new? And then that's a whole other issue, with the limited resources we have.
Well, you mentioned amalgamation, and I guess in theory it looked pretty darn good. Only in theory, but you have to remember from my experience living in Sudbury for quite a long time, under the old two-tier system, and also before even regional government, the various municipalities, Onaping, Levac, Falcon Bridge, Garson, Sudbury, Coppercliff, Dowling, they all used to sort of manage pretty good with a mix of public servants doing essential jobs, managing finances and stuff. You would have a professional person perhaps maintaining or running or supervising recreation, but a lot of the services from library to recreation was done by volunteers. Now, have you observed any shift from? I've observed many shifts from the volunteer system.
I think that volunteerism, and many people thought that, well, once you retire, you're going to volunteer a lot. Well, that actually hasn't happened. The only people that really volunteer, by and large, are those people who have always volunteered. People who have worked all their lives and not volunteered, some of them will volunteer, there's no doubt about that, but the vast majority will continue to do the same things they did when they were working. They might travel, you know, if they've always traveled, they're probably going to continue to travel. If they haven't, well, the chances are they'll do some, but we're all creatures of habit. But looking at municipalities across the country, and, you know, I visited Duncan, B.C. on the island just a couple of years ago. You can go to any of our small communities. You can go to Terrace Bay here in Ontario. You can go to some of the small communities in the Ottawa Valley, some of the smaller communities in southern Ontario, all functioning quite nicely. It's very interesting. And yet we have, since amalgamation, we have our smaller communities that, as you say, looked after themselves very well. They had municipal employees that were very responsible. They knew what they were doing because they had a limited area of responsibility. Now we have sort of centralized, and people say, well, you know, we have a lot of traffic downtown. You know why? One of the reasons we have a lot of traffic downtown is because all the workers that we used to have out in the municipalities are now traveling down to Tom Davies Square. We've sort of centralized things, and we've become bigger, but not necessarily better. And is it possible to go back? most people say no, but maybe we could look at some other models that would bring some of the services more directly closer to where they're needed. And this would require really a quantum shift in some degree of thinking. But regional government, when you look back in retrospect, wasn't really all that bad. You know, the main services, of course, police services and economic development and that, probably have to be looked at on a more regional basis, but some of the other services are probably best dealt with closer to home.
Yeah, I think one of the observations that's perhaps becoming increasingly glaringly obvious is if you live in one of the old communities, Falconbridge, Garson, Onaping, Levac, Dowling, at one time you could make a call to the either the town administrator, or you had a councillor who was there. You had actually a town council, I remember, Chelmsford or Rayside Balfour.
Yeah, they had sometimes six, seven councillors.
That's right. Yeah. So if you had an issue or a problem, you could have it dealt with locally if it was within the realm of the municipality. And if it was a regional issue, you had a conduit to the regional system. Whereas now you have 12 councillors, and it must be a horrendous task for an individual councillor to be able to look at local community issues, but at the same time deal with the macro issues of the region.
And I think that, and we've had the opportunity to meet with approximately half of the councillors on behalf of Friendly to Seniors and Canadian Association of Retired Persons, I know, just to present the views of seniors to councils, and it's obvious that they are overwhelmed. There's such a vast area of responsibility. And, of course, we have 2,000 employees. We have a large staff. They're really put in a position of just being able to be given information, but not really having the opportunity to acquire that much knowledge of what's going on. You know, to really explore some of the issues, and so it sometimes is a little easier just to go along with what staff recommends without really delving a little deeper into perhaps what maybe other opportunities might be presented or other alternatives, or even sometimes just to question, because it's very interesting. If you're an employer, and I've been an employer in supervisor and management positions, and I was on the school board as a trustee and chair of the school board, we often questioned when solutions and possible plans were brought forward to us, and we'd say, can you prove this? Or oftentimes, go back to the drawing board. As in many cases, sometimes it's always a good idea, regardless if a plan looks pretty good, to ask, go back to the drawing board, and sometimes you end up with something even better, or to present various options. And it's somewhat disturbing that, we have some good staff, there's no doubt about that, but it's disturbing sometimes when we have to go to consultants from even outside the city to come up with possible solutions to our perceived problems. And if you're a consultant, you have a template, and you apply this template to practically any particular situation. So if you're called upon to do a consulting job in Orangeville or Thunder Bay or Oakville or whatever, and then you're called upon to do it in Sudbury, you apply that same template. And sometimes the template is good, but other times it doesn't really take into consideration some of the, I guess you might call them differences that maybe exist in each community, of which we know of. And oftentimes it seems like the consultants don't really come to the people to get some of the input that perhaps would be more valuable than just going to the staff.
Yeah, no. A couple of things. CARP, Canadian Association of Retired Persons, people. Of course, not all retired people are seniors. All right, so you've got a particular demographic
50 on up, basically,
associated with the CARP. And you also have seniors who, I guess, traditionally are people over the age of 65. I've met people who are 40 and they're seniors. But the fact of the matter is that it's generally accepted that people over 65 are seniors.
Yeah.
But what, from the Friendly to Seniors group, people must communicate their concerns, but what are the, you know, top, say, three or maybe five major concerns?
Well, we did surveys, you know, and we'd professional surveys done by the Oracle Group. We did focus groups. We've continued to survey our members and those over 65 by various means. And the two big issues, I would say, and continue to be the big issues, are housing and health. And they sort of vie for number one and number two spots. But housing, very, very critical for many seniors because, you grow older and your housing needs are going to change. And what we've seen really this year, very interesting situation this year, we've reached what we predicted would be a tipping point. And that seniors who have been in their homes for, in many cases, years and years, who have reached the age where they feel they don't want to maintain their present residence. And these would be homes primarily in the, say, $185,000 to $250,000 range, and throughout the city. And you've seen an enormous number of these homes for sale this year. And seniors are moving out, and they're either moving into apartments or they're leaving town. They're not moving into condominiums by any great number because the cost of moving into condominiums is very high. So you can sell your home for, you know, $250,000 and move into an apartment, and some apartments now are fairly reasonable at $1,100, $1,200 a month, and you have enough money to cover an apartment. You don't have enough money necessarily to move into a new McMansion at $400,000, but you've sort of made that. So this tipping point has reached. It's not bad because that means that these homes are now available at that price range for people, say, at what you might call moderate incomes, $50,000 or $60,000 combined income, they can afford those homes. But what's really happening is we have noticed young people leaving town, so we may have reached the point now where you've seen the sale of these homes drop off a little bit. So what's happened, we're losing, if you talk to people who run apartment buildings, that they're losing some of their younger tenants and older tenants are moving in. But older tenants aren't going to have to be there forever. And this is something throughout Northern Ontario. So we have a senior population that's greater percentage-wise than most other communities in Southern Ontario. So, but these people aren't going to live forever. So if we're losing our young people going off, you know, for other jobs elsewhere because we don't have a strong manufacturing base here and our mining industry is likely not to increase substantially over the next 10, say, 20 years or ever. So we have a real problem. You know, how are we going to deal with maintaining the services we have with a declining population and an economic base that's not going to be there? And this also applies to healthcare as well, too, because this same population is aging, and until they die, they're going to require additional healthcare services, and they're going to require, in many cases, alternate level of care, which means nursing homes. So, as I said before, this perfect storm is upon us. And, you know, are we ready? Are we sort of battening down the hatches now and saying, well, we'll ride it out somehow and hope that, you know, this population is going to pass through, the boomers are going to pass through and they're going to die and we'll be okay? Our school populations are dropping. We're looking at school closures. What's it, 12 now? Oh. The public board are being closed. So these are real issues. And yet, you know, as far as we can determine from our municipal leaders, we hear, you know, statements like, we're going to continue to grow. You know, we're going to bring in new industry. You know, people are going to move into town. We're going to be okay. There's no problem. And, you know, even our official plan, our planners are looking at moderate or even better than moderate growth. We think that they should be looking at plans for maybe static growth, or those of us who have been here for years. Remember when I moved to town back in 1966, you know, we had empty apartment buildings that had just been built. And, you know, and then the population went up, but the population could also go down. So these various scenarios we feel as seniors should be addressed, and we're not going to be around forever. But we'd like the community to be here forever and to be somewhat viable going into the future.
Okay, now, I'd just like to remind everybody, you're listening to CKLU 96.7 on your FM dial. We have a special guest today, John Lindsay, a one-time broadcaster, one-time just about everything, and also a leading light in the Minnow Lake area, who helped to get some of the nice things going there, and also he's involved with the Friendly to Seniors. But now, to follow on with what you were saying, I think you talk about the perfect storm. You now have seniors who are on fixed incomes with diminishing buying power, but also the people, the Generation X's that are coming through now, will not qualify for those fancy jobs with pension benefits and health benefits and all the rest of it. So the, I guess, disposable capacity of the generation that's following the seniors does not have the same, I would say, economic power that the seniors had in a previous era.
This is, we can see that already, that actually a lot of the younger people have diminished expectations. They're beginning to realize that maybe you and I, Lionel, maybe lived through the golden period of reasonably secure jobs, lifetime jobs, pensions that were fairly rich, and now we see a lot of contract work. I know there's predictions that perhaps some of the jobs that exist now will not be around in the next 10 to 20 years. So that presents some interesting scenarios as well, too. Do we have to look at sort of some new form of guaranteed income to help these individuals who are not going to find jobs and somehow redistribute wealth? The other area, just, before we run out of time, we want to mention that Culture Days is coming up, and, Sudbury is very rich in culture. We have a number of activities for Culture Days. But there's going to be an open forum coming up, and this will be on Friday, September the 30th, at the Open Studio just down the street here at 93 Cedar Street. And we're going to have Dr. David Robinson is going to talk about maybe some degree of arts and culture for the community. We're going to have individual artists say that, what can be done for me as an individual artist? Do I need a new fancy building, or some little handout might help me, enhance my talent, something like that. We're also going to be discussing maybe possible future uses for the Sudbury Arena if there's a new arena built elsewhere. And this is going to be interesting to see what people might have to say about how can we retrofit? How can we use older buildings instead of all the time building something new? And sometimes the cost can be, as you know, we're here close to the new School of Architecture, which was budgeted at $27 million, has come in at $45 million. So, sometimes you have to look at these, okay, we're going to build something, but, how much is it really going to cost? And is it better maybe to retrofit? We have a number of schools that are probably going to be coming vacant. How can we use those? Can they be retirement homes? Can they be put for other purposes? Do we really need to build new roads before we fix our present roads? Some of these things we should really take a look at. And we really have to determine what is best for the community and not necessarily what is best for those who are going to benefit, such as staff and management at City or builders or others who have special interests in the community. Because make no words, as a bureaucrat for many years, I know that bureaucrats have a special interest, and that's to maintain their own position and their own jobs and create their own empire. And sometimes it's the job of electing government to make sure that you keep these situations in perspective and to make sure they don't get out of hand.
When you talk about alternate accommodations, sadly, there's been a few vacant churches around.
That's true.
And I'm thinking many, many, many years ago, traveling around central England, Wiltshire, Oxford, Hampshire, that area. I happened to be fairly close to Oxford University, and I went into a pub that was owned by the history department of the university, and it was a converted church. So it served almost a triple purpose. It was a pub that made money, and they managed to preserve a historic site at the mm-hmm. same time. Now, when we think of a place, an art center, which is fantastic, there are a couple of, there have been vacant churches around town. I think, you know, one in Garson, I don't know what they use it for now. There was one on Regent Street by Killers Crossing, a great big Anglican church. I don't keep score on all the vacant churches, unfortunately, but there is an opportunity to make a church into an artist commune, for want of a better term, as well as a gallery.
Oh, there's all sorts of possibilities. I know that, well, of course, Theatre Cambrian is operating in an old church, and I know in St. Jacob's, just north of Kitchener-Waterloo, one of the old churches there has been converted into a toy shop. It's rather interesting. You're going, there's the pulpit, and then they have you know, toys right next to it. It's very, and the stained glass windows, it's very interesting. It's a little bit, can I use the term, unorthodox, but it seems to work. So how can you take, Sudbury's had a bad, bad history of taking down older buildings, you know, historic buildings, and, you know, the post office, I guess, is probably the prime example. Where other communities, I mean, you're from the old country, from England. I mean, some of those buildings have been there for centuries. Here, it seems, I know he's talking to some people in the school board the other day, and they're talking about, well, that school is 40 years old. It's pretty old. I mean, that's half my age. I mean, what are we talking about? I mean, I need some renovations too, but...
Well, I make the observation that when we think of the bridge in Nepigon, you go to Europe and there are bridges built by the Romans over 2,000 years ago, and they're still standing and used. But let's change the topic.
So are we old fogies? One of the things I just wanted to say is that I think there's an ageism thing here. You know, and it's sort of unspoken, but we really get that feeling from some of those who are younger, especially some of those who have been elected, and even staff as well too. That, you know, in our various organizations, they look at us when we come up with possible solutions or observations about the past, or as, you know, sort of exhibiting some of our previous knowledge and expertise, that it's really not appreciated. That we sort of, there's almost that feeling that, you know, what do those old fogies know? You know, this is just the modern age. We do things our way. Whereas there's more fogies probably using computers and modern technology than some of the younger people. So, you know, your brain just doesn't die out when you reach a certain age. As a matter of fact, some societies, especially our native societies, really value their elders. But here, it would appear that we do still have that ageism. We even criticize those old folks who are in the hospital as bed blockers, the alternate level of care people who are in there, you know, because we haven't built adequate facilities for them. So, you know, and this does really still exist, and it's something that I think we're ignoring. This huge resource, this knowledge, and this ability of older folks to really contribute.
Yeah. Now, maybe we should sort of change direction. We could talk about mobility and access and all the rest of it ad nauseum, especially trying to get around downtown Sudbury. But let's go change the course here. You've been involved in Minnow Lake Improvement, whatever association, over the years. And, you know, I think it's something that we should be proud of. And I mentioned earlier about volunteerism. I think that it was volunteers that spearheaded Minnow Lake Improvement. Perhaps you could give a little bit of background or history on that.
Well, our restoration group, Minnow Lake Restoration Group, and together with the CAN, you know, and we didn't spend an enormous amount of money. We worked with the city. And, you know, we develop park areas, both waterfront park areas, and, you know, we have several hilltops. Some of the first trails were developed in the area. And really, it's a matter of seeing what potential there is. And this has been throughout the community, really. I mean, it's not only Minnow Lake, but numerous other areas. I think Walden's pretty a good example. Cape Breeze is a good example of where we have those people interested and step forward and actually do things that really do improve their community. Cape Rail probably is their railway museum, and some of the things that they've done out there to enhance the community. Down in Coniston, they're also working, and the flour mill area. So there are things happening throughout the area, but these things are done locally. You know, there's been some involvement with the city, especially in the past, with neighborhood community improvement plans and that sort of thing. But some of this seems to have stalled somehow, and I don't know where what's happened. There's some inertia that's set in, and we don't. I think that people are somewhat discouraged, and that's a little too bad. The cans, I think, have not been given the opportunity to do what they possibly can. I think there's been certain feelings on the part of staff and maybe counselors as well too, that really the cans are meddling. You know, they're meddling sometimes. You know, and some cans that really take on bigger issues like roads and new development, they've been chastised because that shouldn't be something they should be doing. They should be doing flower beds and doing community events, which are very important and which should be done as well. But sometimes there's a new development coming along. If there's concern, like there was in Mineral Lake, about Second Avenue and the possibility of the runoff contributing to further pollution of Ramsey Lake, the city sort of looked at these concerns as being none of the community business. You know, that really you should leave these important decisions to councillors and staff, and really the community should back off from these sort of things, which is certainly not our opinion.
So I guess essentially we've got a them and us situation. But now, to move on, we could carry on for a long time. We're going to start thinking about wind up here. For people sitting listening to us now, who want to be heard and recognized and have their opinions taken seriously, who and how can they get started?
Well, of course, the CAN groups, where some of them are very active and they're very involved. Getting through, to your counselor is sometimes a little difficult. You can't blame it entirely on the counselors, because there's 12 of them. They're all independent. They're really almost at the mercy of the administration, of staff, who have their own agendas. And sometimes the issues that come up, like we've had the arena issue, of course, which has been kicked around quite a bit, it seems like they're almost helpless to take definitive action, and it's rather easy to go to consultants and to say, okay, let's take another look at it. They're really going to be very hard pressed when it comes looking at the current budget with the assessment going down, and with revenue dropping off, and with increased costs. We've seen that already. You know, we've had our certain budgets have gone up. We see the police and fire services budgets keep going up by rates far above inflation. Would you want to be a counselor right now, Lionel? I know that I certainly want. I spent years on the school board, and we had budgets of $150 million. And, we definitely tried to be responsible. People can always, run for elected office if they feel like taking on that particular challenge. But it's a tough job. We know staff are restrained as well too. What are the answers? Who really knows? I think that it's incumbent upon individuals though to come out and to go to groups like CARP, who are really advocating on behalf of seniors, who are working hard. We do put suggestions forward. We looked at certain issues like the St. Joe's parking lot and said, here's a $3 million asset that you're going to tear up, that could be a parking area for people safely, seniors and others coming directly to Bell Park, and not spend $1 million on reducing the parking and really missing an opportunity, I guess is what we're saying. So there's other things like that. Now we know, of course, that Bell Park, and we appreciate, and I'm a member of various ecological groups as well too, and we've got to keep the park green. But then again, we have to make it accessible to people as well, too, safely. So there's other areas that we can get at, and sometimes I don't think there's enough discussion with individuals and groups with respect to things that can be done in the community. We have to have to reach out. The current budget exercise, I know you can go online. You know, the way they've sort of formatted the questions, it really almost, to my mind anyway, indicates that it's going to be pretty much the status quo going forward.
Okay, but now you mentioned CARP, the Friendly to Seniors. So how could somebody, besides the fact that you'll go to the city website and find out who your counselor is, email or phone number of that particular individual, same as you can with your federal and provincial politicians, but the advocacy groups like Friendly to Seniors, CARP, how does somebody get in touch to indicate their thoughts, opinions, and stuff like that? Is there a website? Is there? I know there's a CARP website.
Yeah, there's a Friendly to Seniors website too, and we invite people to, you know, contact us, but we also really encourage them to write letters themselves to the editor and to contact their counselors to, to speak to the mayor, to try to get through somehow, and to maybe start a dialogue with respect to let's look at the situation we're in right now, and see what can be done realistically to address the situations that we have. I know in working for the federal government for many years, sometimes the bureaucracy would grow, and we'd set up an office. I know here in Sudbury, I work for Employment and Immigration, we'd set up an office in the Valley, we set up an office in the South End, we set up an office in Espanola. You know, it was almost like we had never-ending amounts of money to spend on special programs. And then again, this got out of control. And what the government had to do is come in and say, okay, we cut 5%. Cut 5%. So we had to close this, we had to close that. We lost some of our workers, but we kept expenses in line. And is this being done at the local level? They're really hard things to do. Because you don't want to affect your services to such an extent. But I know that in Windsor, what they did is they went to each department and they said to each department, they said, okay, we want to maintain the services as best we can, and we want to cut expenses as well. See what you can do. And they did it. At Kawartha Lakes, you were just down there. They did the lean management program, saved millions of dollars in their operation of their city. So I know that it's possible to be done, and most people who've been in government know that it's possible to be done as well, too. We do have expenses that are mandated by the provincial government that are downloaded on us. It's not going to be easy, but then again, you don't want to be put in the situation. We're not necessarily going to go bankrupt, but as a city, but we're going to be putting a lot of our individual citizens in a very precarious position with respect to their own cost of living. And we know that many have moved to other communities where the costs have been less than they are here, regardless of what you hear from the councillors and the city staff that we're sort of in the middle with respect to expenses. But we hear from other people who are going to Windsor or going to London, going to other communities in Southern Ontario, or getting taxes that aren't as great, their living expenses aren't as great, the weather's perhaps a little bit better. I know that the Canadian Business Magazine did a survey and they indicated that certain things are very important to people when they live in a community, and one of them is the cost of living in that community, taxation, accommodations, the cultural amenities, health care, and believe it or not, how close you are to an airport. But you're a lot closer to the airport if you're in Brampton than you are up here. This is something we really have to look at. How do we make the community attractive to those people we already have here and to those people who we like to come up here, who perhaps want the lifestyle that we have here, and the lifestyle is not that bad. But we have to make sure that it's not too onerous, it's not too expensive to live here, to enjoy this lifestyle.
So I think talking to our audience, there I'm of the opinion where I've kind of personally maxed out on what I can afford. And I think a lot of people probably are maxed out on saying, well, hang on a minute, it's nice to have, to quote, Mailey Drive. What it's nice for, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is that although it might be nice to have a new arena, it might be nice to have a brand new art center, I simply don't have the money for it. And I think that if people have those concerns, number one, they should communicate with their councillor or provincial politician, and perhaps get in touch with CARP or Friendly to Seniors. So on that note, I think maybe we should perhaps wind things up and let people know. I'll pick up the phone, John's in the book.
Or you go to our website, which is friendlytoseniors.ca, and also the CARP website. By the way, CARP now has a new email service, and we have a Facebook page, and of course, the newsletter will be at the Seniors Fair, which is going to be taking place at the Older Adult Parkside Center coming up on the 29th, this coming week. We'll be there, and we have a booth. You can sign up. $5 a year for membership gets you the newsletter. I think we're losing money on this, but nevertheless, we do generate some funds by selling tickets for the Hard of Hearing Home, so we do have some money. And we continue to do this advocacy group, and we really like people. One of the things, if we can go to the city and say, we have about 600 members now, if we can go to the city and say we have 2,000 members, you know, 2,000 older adults who vote, who are concerned about these particular issues, then we do have a voice.
Yeah. Okay, so now we're going to wind up. It's great having you in, John. And I've been the interviewee before, not the interviewer, with you. But I have to mention gay opinions expressed on this radio show by guests and the host that are not necessarily the views of Laurentian University or CKLU radio station. So please bear that in mind. Now we're going to go to one of the other things we're here for is a little bit of music. And my favorite, I'm going to start playing Mary Robbins. I'm going to start with Big Iron. And this is from an LP, probably